Well, I am Matt, and I want to thank you so much for being here today. I am grateful, actually, to have the opportunity to just share part of my story and be with you today. For those of you who don't know me, I am on staff at Northview Church in Carmel as the worship pastor there, and I do get to work with Derek, and he's coming along. And I've got this clicky thing, so I feel powerful. All right. So today I want to talk to you about how our past impacts our present relationships. Whether you realize it or not, or whether you acknowledge it, the reality is that our hurts, our pain, and our trauma have the uncanny ability to creep into our present relationships. And maybe you are one of those people that has said, listen, a lot of bad things happened to me in my past, but I've moved on. I've built this big brick wall, you know, and I've decided that what is on the other side of that brick wall is past, and what is on this side of the brick wall is present, and I'm moving forward. But what I know to be true is that you cannot build that brick wall high enough to keep the effects of that pain and that hurt and that trauma from leaking through into your marriage relationship and into your present. If you have not done the hard work of dealing with, attending to, and processing that hurt and that pain. Now, I recognize that there are some of you in this room that have grown up with parents that had a very healthy marriage relationship, and that's a blessing. But I also realize that there are many of us that have grown up in a home where the only thing that we know for sure is that we don't want to do it the way our parents did it. And still for some, there's a whole other level. You've grown up in homes where the environment was so toxic and so hurtful and so abusive, emotionally abusive, physically abusive, and yes, even sexually abusive, that there is no way that that kind of pain does not find a way to migrate into the present. Did you know that 1 out of 4 women and 1 out of 6 men, some statistics even say 1 out of 5 men, have been sexually abused by the time that they are 18 years old? I am one of the people represented by that statistic. And today, I want to share with you my journey of processing through this pain in what is a very personal story. But it's a story that I share with a purpose. I share it with you because I know that there are many more like me that are living in the shadows, that have not yet come into the light. And through the enemy's power, he has kept their secrets for them behind that imaginary brick wall that they have erected as a means of keeping them safe. But it's not working. It's time for the brick wall to come down, because there is freedom in the telling. Abuse in my family was to be kept a secret, and it was kept a secret until that secret overran my life. In our family, there were 4 kids, my mom, and the man I now refer to as Stepdad from Hell. Stepdad from Hell did terrible things in our family. He was abusive in every way. He came into my world, making us a stepfamily at the age of 3, and with his arrival began his assault. Violence and sex were his weapons of choice. I literally cannot remember a time in my life that I did not know about sex, that I wasn't having sex. He groomed us for sex. And though he never laid a hand on me sexually, he did lay a hand on my older brother, Tim. And because kids do what they've been taught, my brother Tim laid a hand on me. And we began an incestuous relationship that would last 8 years until I was 14 years old. That's not good. That kind of thing can mess you up. None of this with my brother Tim felt like abuse. None of it. He was my brother. We loved each other a lot. We were best friends. We were inseparable. So in a strange way, in a home that was filled with violence and fear, our sexual times together were like an escape, a place to be seen, loved, to feel good, even though it was terribly broken. And we had both known that what we were doing was to be kept a secret, but it never felt wrong. I had never been afraid of Tim until that one day. A day after school when he broke the rules and sexually violated me in the same way that stepdad from hell had been violating him for years. Tim died when I was 21 and when he was 23 years old in a fatal motorcycle accident. And what happened to us or between us was never talked about. In the book of Corinthians, Paul says, I had this thorn and I couldn't get rid of it, even though I prayed and prayed and prayed. But the Lord said, my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. I love the version that says, I will glory in my weaknesses. The Greek word for glory is doxa, which also is used to convey God's infinite and intrinsic worth. I will glory in my weakness. God's infinite and inherent value in my brokenness. Glory is defined as the unspoken manifestation of God. So in my brokenness lives the silent existence, the revelation of God's presence. Wow. I will glory in my weakness. I went to my first counselor when I was in college. I already knew that my life from ages 0 to 18 was like a made-for-TV movie. And so I was actually one of the eager ones to get my baggage out from my life, out on the table, and just have it over with. And after about 5 sessions, I thought I'd worked it all out. I was an overachiever. I thought all you had to do was say it, right? And then I went on my way, and for about 10 years, I did okay. I white-knuckled it from time to time, but I was able to handle it. I pretended as if things were okay, but they weren't. There's a word for that. Acting. Jesus actually warns us about acting. Listen to this parable from the book of Luke. 2 men went to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee and the other was a despised tax collector. Aren't they always despised? The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed like this. Dear God, I thank you that I am not a sinner like everyone else. I don't cheat. I don't lie. I don't sin. And I don't commit adultery. I'm certainly not like that tax collector. I fast twice a week and I tithe on my income. Amen. That's quite a prayer. But the tax collector stood at a distance and dared not even lift his eyes to heaven as he prayed. Instead, he beat his chest in sorrow, saying, O God, be merciful to me, for I am a sinner. I'm telling you, this tax man, not the other, went home made right with God. If you walk around with your nose in the air, this is still scripture. If you walk around with your nose in the air, you're going to end up flat on your face. But if you're content to be simply yourself, exactly who you are, you will become more than yourself. Jesus is simply talking about hypocrisy. And all hypocrisy is acting. Role playing. That's it. Acting like we're something we're not. And Jesus always uses Pharisees as an example of the religious, which is us. That's us. We're religious. He's talking about us. We are actors. especially when it comes to owning up to our issues or our pain or our brokenness. Now, none of us gets off scot-free when it comes to brokenness. Even if you had real good parents, you might be one of those, great, that loved God a lot. But here's why you don't get off. Because you still lived with sinners, right? And we still have an enemy who has lied to us. He's the accuser of the brethren. And there are lies that all of us have believed about ourselves that are not true. I'm weak. I'll never be a real man. I had put a down payment on that one and paid the mortgage on it for years because of all that I had seen. If people only knew the truth about me, if they knew what was really going through my head, I'll never amount to anything. I'll never be enough. I should be ashamed of myself. And then the enemy goes in for the kill and whispers what promises to keep the lies locked up, hopefully forever. Don't tell anyone, ever, or they will abandon you, and you will lose everything. Which is, well, it's just terrifying. So we minimize the problem. That's how we handle it. We make the mistake of thinking, look, everyone goes through tough times. I'm fine. I'm just going to be a godly man, or I'm going to be a godly woman, and I'm going to move on. Act like it doesn't matter. But we can't ignore the voice of one of the greatest kings of all time, King David, who openly confesses in Psalm 102:9, my heart is wounded within me. It matters. It matters. So, let me ask you this. What if we faced our brokenness? What if we got real, got honest with God and with someone else about those thoughts that we've hidden, our deepest secrets that could literally tear at the fabric of our souls? What if owning the truth would finally reveal the power of God in my life and not the power of me gritting my teeth, trying harder, or just faking my way through? 2 Peter 1:5 through 9 says, for this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness knowledge, and to knowledge self-control, and to self-control perseverance, and to perseverance godliness, and to godliness mutual affection, and mutual affection love. For if you possess these qualities in increasing measure, they will keep you from being ineffective and unproductive in your knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. But whoever does not have them is nearsighted. They can only see things close up, right? And blind, they can't see a thing, forgetting that they've been cleansed from their past sins. As I see it, just being honest, there are so many marriages out there that are not doing well. Ineffective, check. Unproductive, absolutely. I mean, let's just be honest. Is there power in your marriage? Not metaphorically, literally. Is there power in your marriage? The healing that we're talking about here is two-part. It's for me, absolutely. God wants me to be free. But also, it's a call. It's a calling on my life to invite others out of their hiding places, right? Christian counselor and author Dan Allender says, it is out of our wounds, from the core ache within us, that we find our calling. God has a plan for me to use me in powerful ways In the book of John, Jesus tells himself, he tells us that through him, we will do greater things than even he did. Greater things? He must have believed that we could be powerful. If you haven't let God step into that space that brokenness has created in you, then it is my belief that you don't know who you fully are or what you are fully capable of. When I started working through some of my issues after panic attacks in my 20s, which made me feel like a girl, no offense, ladies, I actually told a counselor that, it's on record somewhere, I just know it. In my 30s, marital problems, unrest, and unhealthy coping mechanisms, I went to see Doug, the counselor. I feel like he should have his own fanfare and like be wearing a cape. And after every session, I wrote as honestly as I could. Writing is kind of how I process things. Over the course of many sessions, over the course of a few years, I told Doug the story not only of the incest with my brother Tim, but eventually, when it felt safe, of the time that Tim had forced himself upon me on a blue shag rug in my own mother's bedroom. This is a little lengthy, but please listen to this story. It's my story of brokenness, of God's presence that is manifested in that brokenness, and the process of my healing, which finally led to, not to my salvation, but to my redemption and my transformation. This story begins with a counseling session that I had with Doug just after I'd finally told him about what happened in my mother's bedroom with Tim. Something that I had pushed down for over 30 years and for over 2 years of therapy. We don't like to own it, do we? I'm with you. There's a word I'm thinking of, Doug said. Do you know what it is? Rape, I say. Am I right? Doug nods his head. How does that make you feel? Well, I guess it doesn't seem like rape. I mean, we did that stuff every day. You didn't do that every day. Basically, I said, Doug shook his head. I have to disagree with you, Matt, because in your mom's bedroom, you said no to Tim. Actually, you said no twice. That wasn't agreed upon him. What's the difference, Doug? Seriously, force. Force is the difference, he said. So you're saying that I was raped? Yes, I'm saying that you were raped. We sat for a few moments. I could see that blue shag rug in my head. So I want to ask you again, how does that make you feel? I had been so angry at Tim for all of it. But in this moment, after years of looking back, after years of anger at Tim, stepdad from hell, and God, I found something I didn't expect. Compassion. For Tim, for what he'd seen, for what I'd seen, for his part in our broken relationship, and for my part in it. We had grown up in a war zone, and we had fought side by side, brothers in arms. We did the best that we could. I have to forgive him, I finally said. I want to forgive him, but you know what, Doug? I need Tim to forgive me, too. He wasn't alone in all this. Neither one of us knew what we were doing in our brokenness. We did this to each other. Doug smiled. Matt, you are going to help a lot of people. The day I met my wife, Heather, was the day I mourned the death of my brother. On an early fall day, 3 months after his passing, I was transporting black trash bags filled with his clothes back to my college dorm. I hadn't had time to digest his death, but in my dorm room, as I poured his clothes onto the floor, I wept. That same evening, there was a knock at my door. I opened the door, and there she was, standing next to my good friend, Kristen. She didn't know my brother had died, but as Kristen asked questions about Tim and the funeral and how I was doing, Heather made her condolences known. After that day, I saw her around campus several times, and every day, every time I did that I saw her, she had on those pants skids. Remember those with the slippery when wet sign on the back pocket there? Right there. Merry-go-round. I needed gift cards to merry-go-round. And she also had on, she wore those jazz caps that she got from the Wendy's drive-thru. Do you remember those? Oh, gosh. Yeah, old-fashioned hamburgers, Wendy's. I had always been into fashion at the time, and jazz caps, well, worked mostly on old ladies that wear the kind of sunglasses that go over their regular sunglasses. But I could tell under that jazz cap was a pretty girl, and eventually we started dating. First days of our relationship, I was much more melancholy than my normal self. I can't imagine the enormity of what was going on in my spirit. The loss of my brother that was my lover. The bitterness lying dormant in my heart that I didn't even have access to. One evening we were alone in a darkened performance hall in the music wing of the Fine Arts Building at Anderson University. And Heather began to play a song on the concert grand piano that sat in the middle of the room. I had never heard the song, but it pierced into me. It was called Thanksgiving by George Winston. It was a contemplative piece that opened the sadness for the very first time in the presence of someone else. That night, I sat next to Heather on the piano bench, and I let it out for as long as it took. Fast forward 20 years. Last year, I went through an experience called a prayer walk, or a prayer expo, during our Strong Challenge at our church. I was given an MP3 player with music and audio narration and was guided through several rooms. Near the end of the prayer walk, there was a room called The Wall. The instructions began this way. Ahead of you is the wall. Sooner or later, everyone hits the wall. Sounds like a bad movie. These are often walls of our own making, caused by bitterness, hate, or unforgiveness. Unforgiveness. As soon as I heard that word, I thought of Tim. Take a walk over to the table. You'll see clothespins. These clothespins represent people. People that you have unresolved anger towards. They might be your former friends, bosses or co-workers, even family members. More accurately, these clothespins represent the bitterness you feel towards these people. Write the name of a person that you need to come to terms with on one of the pins. As you pick up the pin, ask God to forgive that person for whatever caused the rift between you, then ask him to forgive you for your anger and resentment. So I wrote his name on the pin with a red marker and sat down in the corner of the room for a moment. Behind the narrator's voice, music began to play. I knew the song instantly, echoing from the performance hall 20 years earlier, from the day I mourned his death with Heather at my side. It was that song, Thanksgiving. I couldn't believe it. I sat in the corner of the room and knew that this moment had been prearranged by God. I pictured Tim walking into the room and sitting down right next to me. We sat side by side. "I'm sorry," I whispered softly. "So am I," I imagined him saying back to me. "I'm so, so sorry," I said, clinging tightly to that clothespin in my hand with his name on it. "Me too," he said. "Can you forgive me?" "Of course, Matt. Can you forgive me?" "Yes, I think I finally can." "We didn't know what we were doing, did we?" he asked. "No." we didn't. My eyes were closed tight. In my mind, his face looked tired, like he journeyed perhaps not so tenderly in his afterlife. I wish we could stay right here, that you could stay right here with me. When you're finished writing, walk through the wall. Pin the bad feelings on the hanging strips as you walk through and leave the hatred behind. Actively move through bitterness, hate, or unforgiveness. Layers of black fabric had been hung up on the ceiling and shredded, forming a black wall with hundreds of clothespins hanging from each strip. I thought that this act of mutual forgiveness was worthy of its own strip. So I walked into the wall looking for a piece of fabric with no other pins on it, but there were no empty pieces. I couldn't find any. In the dark of the wall, I saw a piece toward the back with only one pin on it. It seemed like the next best thing to me. When I took that strip in my hand, the clothespin that was already there laid against my wrist, it simply read, "Matt." I was stunned. "You were already here," I said under my breath. "You've already forgiven me." It was as if we had just missed each other. Tears filled my eyes as I pinned his name next to mine on the black strip of fabric. I held them in my hands, and I let thanksgiving fill my chest fuller than it had ever been. Now, I was getting somewhere. Now I was moving on. The prayer walk had reset me. As soon as I finished it, I ran back inside the room where I had pinned our names together and searched for them among the strips of fabric. I wanted to keep them. Among hundreds of clothespins, I saw the two of them hanging together side by side, and I took a picture. I have that picture here. And then I grabbed both of them and put them in my pocket, which I really wasn't supposed to do, but you know, do what you gotta do. The point had been to leave it behind, but I didn't want to forget this moment. So I put them in my desk at work for safekeeping. The next day, I decided I would take them home, but when I opened my desk drawer, there was only one clothespin. The one with Tim's name on it was nowhere to be found. I knew I had put it in my desk the day before, and I'm not one of those people that does that weird stuff. You know what I'm talking about. And I was frantic to find it. I searched the floor in my office. I retraced the steps out to my car. I searched the parking lot in a panic. This moment was not going to slip away from me, but as I was on all fours searching under my car in a frenzy, I heard a voice in my spirit, and it said three words. "Let him go. Let him go." Yes, it was time. This journey was one of the most difficult things I had ever done. I wanted to call it quits along the way. I wanted to skip my appointments with Doug or simply stop scheduling them, but I hadn't. I had gone. I had done the work, and I felt like God was honoring that. "I feel like God is honoring the work," I told Doug after all of this had happened. He responded. "I wonder if it's something more personal than that, Matt." "What do you mean?" I asked. "Well, I don't think God is honoring the work. I think he's honoring you. It isn't about what you did. It's about who you are. God is interested in you, not your work." Does that resonate at all? It struck a nerve. Output had always been what I had offered. Because of my twisted past, I needed desperately to make something of myself if I were ever to matter at all. God didn't put the clothespin there because you worked hard, Matt. He put it there so you and Tim could be side by side. Because he knew you needed your brother. The work may have made you ready to receive it, but the gift was about you. It was for you. I have to keep this man around, I thought to myself in that moment. He sees into deeper waters, and I need someone fluent in the language of life to help point the way. He was more than a counselor. He had become a friend. By the way, I told my girls, my daughters, told them about all of this, about me, about the abuse. Wow, you've had quite a week, Doug said. How did it go? It went great, I told him, and it had. They had been asking about my past more often and had become interested in my life before them. They knew things had been different in my house growing up, and I had always known that one day I would tell them. So one night they were getting ready for bed in the guest room, which they loved to sleep in every once in a while, and I knew it was time. I sat on the end of the bed after tucking them in. I have kind of a tough thing to tell you, I said. It's about your family, isn't it? Chloe just right away. Yes, Chloe. I went on to explain things to my 12 and 13-year-old that I hoped wouldn't harm them. They asked a lot of questions and showed great concern. This is a really sad story, Dad, Evelyn said to me halfway through. Is this too much, girls? No, Dad, it's fine. We're just sad for you, Chloe said. We talked into the night. They asked questions about their Uncle Tim. I told them about the clothespins, and their eyes lit up with wonder. Finally, Evelyn asked, Dad, how did you learn to be such a great dad? Because I've been to a bunch of my friends' houses, and you are like the best one, for sure. And no one even showed you how. Thank you. Bring it in, Dad, Chloe said, always ready for a party. I crawled up right in between them, and we lay together staring at the ceiling while I told them that God had redeemed my bad story, that he had taken what was back there and had given me a new family right here. With my arms around both of them, I knew that this is what I had been born for, to father them, to love them. They were perfect. I was curious about what Doug thought about me telling them. Do you think it was okay for me to tell them, I asked. Matt, there are no secrets in families, only denial. They already knew, he said. What do you mean they already knew? I mean, Chloe said, it's about your family, isn't it? She already knew, Matt. She did, didn't she? I love those girls, I said to him. I love them. They are my family. They certainly are, he said, smiling. But Matt, so is your brother. So is Tim. The past left unattended. Even if you weren't raped or abused, even if your parent wasn't an alcoholic, even if things looked okay on the outside, the past left unattended is a minefield, and it's only a matter of time. Some in this room are struggling, unhappy, unfree, I get it, unsatisfied, unloved. I'm not a marriage counselor, but can I just say, whatever your problem is, whatever your issue is, it's not the person next to you. I know it seems like it is. It's not. It's you. You cannot fix an internal problem with an external solution. You just can't. So how do you get there? You'd have to recover. To drag the lies and the dysfunction out of the shadows and into the light where Jesus can get his beautiful hands on them. And if you think that eventually the brokenness the pain will just go away on its own? No. Time heals all wounds. Nope. It's not true. You can keep pushing it down with alcohol, money, power, control, shopping, TV, one more dessert. We'll pretty much use whatever we can to keep from facing the pain or from handing it over to God, who is manifested in our brokenness, His power, His true identity and value revealed in our brokenness. Why do we continue acting? I promise you, if you go home and try harder, it's not going to happen. Or if you watch Dr. Phil every day, or if you go to a marriage seminar and practice all of the principles and follow all of the rules, because the redemptive process does not follow a set of principles. The redemptive process makes things up as it goes along. If it gets blocked, it improvises. And sometimes the only thing standing in the way of those improvisations is our inability to grade on a curve. The redemptive process is not clinical, it's holistic. The redemptive process is not scholastic, it's Montessori. You can't outsmart it. The redemptive process is not an assembly line. It's no assembly required. We must stop looking for the rule book and instead look for the rules that are written on our hearts. They are speaking to us. My children, keep my words and store up my commands within you. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Write them deep within your heart. Would you pray with me? God, our glory and the lifter of our head, may we find you living in our brokenness, where your value is found, where you don't always speak words, but your healing power is revealed. Amen.
April and Doug will be our speakers at next month's Better Together Luncheon talking about resolving conflict in marriage, so you won't want to miss that. But I want to give you all an opportunity to ask questions. We don't have a lot of time left, so go ahead and raise your hand and Matt will call on you. April is up here. If there's questions that are, maybe more clinical in nature, she can kind of jump in and tag team the answer to the question as well.
Yeah. I have one sister, and her story is her story, you know, and so I've kind of just protected her in that way. She's been processing over the years as we both have. Yeah. I'm going to defer to April on this. April was actually my counselor for a while, and I think when she felt like I was too crazy, she passed me off to Doug. No, really, she said, you know, I think you should talk to Doug about some of this stuff. And so anyway, I'm going to defer to you on that if you don't mind.
Okay. I think that what would be helpful is to ask questions, but not to tell someone what you think they need to do. So you might start with what you've noticed and say, I've noticed this thing about you. I don't know what it is you're noticing. And I wanted you to know that I believe it's something you could be free of. And is it something you've ever considered maybe working on? That, or you could also say if you ever want to talk about this issue, I want you to know I would be glad to hear what you have to say. Sometimes people just need that invitation, but if you go and grab them, you will tell me that that makes people hide more. So,
how has your mom processed this information coming out? How has that worked?
My mom was resistant at first. She, I think, felt responsible for everything, you know, because she married stepdad from hell. So at first she was resistant. She didn't want to talk about it. And so I kind of went through a process on my own of just, it finally came to a point where I said, look, this is my story. You know, you have your story. This is my story. And really through therapy began to understand that that's okay, you know. And my mom has really moved forward, which has been awesome, because I know that not every parent will, you know, but she has done an exceptional job of, you know, I mean, she reads my blogs, you know, so, and she'll send me a text, I read your blog, you're so brave, that kind of stuff, where she's really encouraged me, which has been awesome, because I just think that would be hard, you know. So, yeah?
Did you ever confront your stepfather or reconcile?
No. You know, I learned, and I forget where it's said, but where sometimes confronting a person who's unconfrontable will bring insult and injury upon yourself, Ken. And that is nothing that will ever happen. No. You know, unless he came to me, you know, that would be a different story, but I'm not going to seek him out. No. Oh, yep.
So you said your past that comes with your relationships has caused problems. How has some of those things manifested in your relationship, and how do you get over them?
Oh, well, you know, first of all, you develop coping mechanisms, you know, and for me, drinking became one of those. That causes problems, you know. It really caused problems for me because I latched onto it in a very unhealthy way. But with whatever we deal with that's unresolved, it comes out sideways. You know what I mean? Somehow it's going to come out. It's different for every person, but a lot of times, do you ever get the feeling that you're fighting about things or experiencing things that are just symptoms, you know, of a deeper problem, you know, and for me that was it. I was just, when I started having panic attacks initially, nothing was wrong,
yeah.
You know, and that's what was driving me crazy. I couldn't figure out where was this coming from, and this is ridiculous, I should be able to outthink this, you know, and my very first counselor said, I said, nothing's wrong. And he said, well, I think maybe there is because you're having panic attacks. You know, it's like, duh. You know? So,
can you say something?
Yes, please.
I a lot of times will tell my clients that the way your brain is made, it is built on associations. And so if you have something that's similar in your current life, it can trigger not only the feelings that belong in this situation, but what was undone back here brings forward and gets dumped in. So a story I tell is if you're driving in the parking lot and you try to get a parking spot and somebody just beats you to it, and you have a really intense reaction, much more than maybe what that called for, like you're really, really mad. I never get it. You know, life is so unfair. I never get a parking spot, or oh, you know, you're sad the rest of the day because life just treats me so badly. Those are little, the big wall that gets built, those are ways that the toxicity from the unhealed wounds kind of come back and leak in, because your brain can't help but go back and get the things that feel similar and dump them into the present.
Hmm. Yeah.
Here.
I'll go ahead.
As a father, I would imagine some of your anxiety is how do you worry about your daughters, their safety. How do you handle that anxiety from getting the best of you, whether real or imagined or exaggerated, what ifs?
Well, you know, I can't, I mean, the statistics are there. You know, I can do what I can do, which for me is, my girls don't do sleepovers. You may be in this room and be one that I've said no to. I don't know. But I don't do them. You know, we don't do sleepovers. Somebody can come stay at our house because I know what's happening in my house, but they're not going to sleep at anybody else's house. This is like, I might find out one day that I was all crazy about it, you know, but I just am doing my best to prevent something like that from happening. So a lot of it is just listening to your gut. And I think a lot of times what I've noticed, because my wife did not have my experience, that when I said, well, why don't you call my sister and ask her, that we have this gut for stuff like that that we actually listen to because we've been down that road before. You know, where sometimes you get a gut feeling where you're like, I don't know. I mean, they're having some people over there, and I don't really know. I think you have that for a reason, you know, and you kind of only get one shot is how I feel, you know, so I'm just going to do my best to, you know, but not overdo it where I, like, lock them up in their bedrooms and never let them come out.
All right. Oh. Well, Matt, would you be willing to stay if people have additional questions
totally.
They can ask you
yep.
afterwards? Hey, before you go, I want Matt to tell you where to find his blog. Hey, Matt, where would you
MattBaysWriter.com.
MattBaysWriter.com. Correct?
Yep.
It's MattBaysWriter.com.
Thank you, guys.